So in the late 1800s, this fellow named Rabbi Yoshi was walking along a dark road at night, and he saw in the distance a torchlight. Back in those days, a torch meant an actual torch, like a stick with fire on it, not like an REI flashlight they call a torch. So torches were really helpful for seeing at night, but they were pretty dangerous. If you drop a flashlight, it might break. If you drop a torch, you might start a forest fire, or at least get a pretty bad burn. But that wasn't what annoyed Rabbi Yoshi about this torch. He was annoyed because it was such a dark night, and without electric lights, the darkness was totally thick and deep. And he relied on his eyes adjusting to the dark to make sure he didn't trip over branches. Think about when you're driving at night, maybe in the Cascades, and a car comes around the bend with its brights on, and you're blinded, and you can't see a thing. The fire this traveler carried messed up Rabbi Yoshi's night vision. Humph, he thought. Humph. I hope this person has a good reason for having a torch, because I may trip because of it. As he approached the light, he saw that it was an older man walking alone with a cane, and he was carrying the cane out ahead of him, tapping it on things because he was blind. He tapped along with his cane, making sure he wasn't walking into anything. That part made sense. But Rabbi Yoshi was a famous scholar and a practical man, and a blind man carrying a torch mystified him. Why carry a bright, flaming ball of fire if it doesn't help you to see? Why take the risk of having flames if you don't need the light? The rabbi stopped the man and asked him, "You're blind, right? So what is with the torch? The fire doesn't help you see, and it's wrecking my night vision. Plus, all that fire, it could do some serious damage. What is the deal?" Well, the man said, "I carry the torch for other people, because often other people see it, and they rush to help me to my destination. And if I didn't have the light, they'd walk on by, because it's so very dark. They take my arm, and they guide me so that I don't fall. The fire alerts them. Here I am, and I could use your help." The blind man did not say, "And instead of helping me, you're yelling at me about your temporarily stunted vision, you big jerk." And is that the rabbi's voice I hear? "Aren't you always telling us to be nice? You are a real piece of work." But I imagine, with or without the blind man saying this, Rabbi Yoshi felt like a real piece of work. I've been in this situation before, jamming my foot into my mouth. Perhaps you have too. But this particular humiliation was good for Rabbi Yoshi because it got him to thinking. Human life is quite a paradox. On one hand, we must rely on one another, like the blind man with his torch. Where would we be without community, family, even those random acts of kindness? On the other hand, we have to watch out for ourselves. We have to protect our own night vision so we don't fall. We have to prioritize our personal needs. Even the blind man carried a flaming torch because it benefited him, even though it could burn a stranger or even an entire forest. He pondered, what should hold greater sway on our actions, service to community or service to yourself? As a Jew, he believed that each person is individually crafted by God. We are, in the best possible way, each a real piece of work. We are a sculpture hand-forged by the master blacksmith. On the other hand, there are billions of us, trillions of us, if you consider all the people that have existed on this planet since the beginning of human beings. And the Jewish holy text, the Torah, says that we are all made of dust, the same dust Adam was made from in the Garden of Eden. In fact, Adam's name means of dust. So we're both intricate and beloved pieces of art and a dust mote amongst trillions of dust motes, no more important than the ones you sweep out the door with your old broom. Rabbi Yoshi then coined the phrase on which thousands of dissertations and millions of sermons have been written. In each pocket, carry a slip of paper. On one write, I am just dust and ashes. There are trillions more just like me. On the other right, I was specially created and I am extraordinarily loved. I am made of the stuff that is no less than what makes stars. I love this philosophy even more now that I realize it is embedded in our Unitarian Universalist faith. Unitarian Universalism honors seven principles. They're not requirements, they're more guidelines. They're not creeds we have to all agree to, but seven moral propositions that encourage us to live more ethical lives. If this is the first you've heard of the seven principles, I encourage you to take home the outer part of your order of service because it has all the information you could ever want about them, and they're pretty interesting. They're pretty thought-provoking. But for our purposes today, I want to talk about how we can hold the first principle in one hand and the seventh principle in the other and keep each in a pocket. Our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. This echoes Rabbi Yoshi's view that we are all individually crafted and loved. For Rabbi Yoshi, this meant traditional Hasidic belief that we all carry the stamp of God, a bit of holiness that makes us a sacred creation. Many, perhaps even most Unitarian Universalists, don't believe in that Hasidic version of God, but we do believe that every person is sacred, that every person is holy and should be listened to and treated with fairness. This first principle isn't just chicken soup for the soul junk. This is serious stuff. Theologian and fantasy writer C.S. Lewis, he wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. He said that once we realize that we're all holy creatures, our values shift. Cities, great works of art, governments, monuments, gigantic bank accounts, they're not worth anything. But humans, from the kindest to the greediest, from the homeless beggar to the billionaire, the magnificent opera singer to the guy working the night shift at the gas station, we are what has value. We are amazing. Abraham Heschel was a rabbi and a scholar who believed that, as Unitarians do, religious truth is found in all religions. He said, "We must never be oblivious of the equality of the divine dignity of all people." Whew. The image of God is in the criminal as well as in the saint. The basic dignity of humans isn't made up of their individual achievements, their virtues, or their special talents. It's inherent in their very being. So we all have inherent worth and dignity. When we have to foreclose on our home, we have inherent worth and dignity. When we get fired for incompetence, we have inherent worth and dignity. We have inherent worth and dignity when we get divorced or dumped, when we fail a test, even when we're rude to a blind guy on a dark road at night. No matter what, we have inherent worth and dignity. Stick it in your pocket and pull it out when you have an awful day. No matter what, you're a sacred creature. With the biggest bank account or the smallest, even when you're a big jerk, you have inherent worth and dignity. However, sometimes all that worth and dignity can swell the head. Sometimes we get self-centered and we fret too much over our little problems. Oh, no one ever makes the coffee except you at work. How awful. I failed a test and life is going to end. The world is over. No. We need to balance out all that hubris. We don't need hubris. Check that. It's not about us. We forget that other people are sacred too, that they have problems that are just as important to them as our problems are to us, that they could use some help getting down the road, even if their torch is wrecking our night vision. To keep the ego in check, we have the other pocket, in which we carry the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. We are sacred individuals, sure, but we don't live in a vacuum. We live in a web. And the actions that I take affect all of us. And the actions that you take affect me and everybody else too. We have a responsibility to each other because when we help the blind man safely down the road, the whole web benefits. So in one pocket, we have a reminder that we are sacred, and in the other, a reminder that all 7 billion of us are sacred. And this balance is what is key. This week, Rosh Hashanah begins. And it's a time for Jewish folks to reflect on the year and ask for forgiveness from God and from each other and to set intentions for the year. And this work is called Teshuvah, and it means assessing where you are in life at this moment. It literally means assessment. What needs to change? What is going really well? What could be tweaked so you can live a more ethical, a more joyful, a more spiritual life? More relatedly than you might think, this Sunday also marks the kickoff of our annual stewardship drive. I'm sure you hadn't heard that yet. This means a fun chance to get to know your church family through house meetings, where over munchies we can discuss our dreams for the future of the congregation. I'm going to 8 house meetings, so I hope you can all go to one. No guilt. Is it the time to build a new building next door? Should we remodel it? Is it just fine how it is? We're going to talk at these house meetings about the future of our congregation and of our physical space that we share. Where are we going, and what is the best way to get there? It's time for Teshuvah, because as the psalmist wrote, where we put our treasure is where we place our heart. Because as some anonymous but wise theologian said, we humans tend to put our money where our mouth is, meaning that after we meet our essential needs, how we spend whatever's left says a lot about what we value. You can't buy love, but what you buy can certainly show where your devotion is directed. Where is your heart? So this season, let's consider the wisdom in each pocket. In one, we have the inherent worth and dignity of all people. This one is about you. What benefits do you get from this church? Perhaps spiritual nourishment on Sundays. Perhaps an uplift from the music that we share. Maybe your children are learning to think critically about faith, how to find a spirituality that is all their own. How their wisdom is the ultimate authority in all matters religious. Maybe you have a middle schooler beginning OWL, or Our Whole Lives, which is a program in which they'll learn about setting personal boundaries, about navigating relationships, and about respecting their own body because they are a sacred creature. Perhaps pastoral care has helped you through a difficult time. Perhaps bonds formed in a small group chalice circle led to deeper friendship. Maybe singing in the choir gives you newfound confidence. Maybe the women's circle or the men's circle is the highlight of your month. In this pocket, we're reminded to give not because we owe it, not out of obligation or guilt, but to keep the blessings coming. This is when it's okay to think selfishly. This pocket inspires us to give because we know the high value of the gifts we receive here at Shoreline Unitarian, and we want more. In the other pocket, we're reminded that it's not all about us. How does your generosity affect the web? I don't have a child in the religious education program, but I feel very strongly that they're all mine, and I bet you feel that way too. I'm so glad to contribute to the next generation of leaders. We're growing confident and incredibly kind and ethically moored young people. And even if none of them is technically mine, they're all mine. Perhaps you know someone who has found solace in pastoral care. Maybe your heart is moved by how much your fellow church members are moved by the music. And this church doesn't end at our property line. We're activists for justice. We're voices of reason in a volatile religious landscape. We're Unitarians. And whoever you are, and wherever you come from, and whoever you love, you are welcome here. That's a radical concept for a church. That's a life-saving message for gay and lesbian folks and transgender folks and folks who thought they were damned for not believing. Sometimes I forget, sometimes I get complacent, and maybe you do too, that souls, even lives, are saved because of this simple message. You are welcome here. No matter what, you are welcome here. Embraced here. Here you will find love. This is a church worth giving to because this message is so radically good for our community and our world, our entire web. Unitarians transform our country's religious landscape, and I think that's worth my money. This is where I place my treasure and my heart. My beloved church family, my fellow spiritual travelers on this life's path, it's time for teshuva. It's time for assessment. Not guilt, not a high-pressured sales pitch. I promise that this is the most high-pressured pitch you'll hear for the rest of the year. But as you walk this night road, put one hand in your left pocket and remember that you are a sacred being, full of worth and dignity. Put your hand in your right pocket and remember that you are part of a church family that cherishes you. Where you place your treasure is where you place your heart. So let's come together.